Conversations That Matter is a partner program for the Center for Dialogue at Simon Fraser University. The production of this program is made possible thanks to the support of the following and viewers like you.
What is it about dealing with doctors that leaves us so uncertain? Why is it that so many people, despite getting a prescription, don't take their medication? Why do such a large number of patients wind up leaving their doctor's office feeling confused and alone? Dr. Ronnie Zeiger believes it's because of the siloed nature of the medical profession. The solution? Community. Dr. Zeiger created Smart Patients, an online server where people suffering from a variety of chronic health problems can connect with each other to offer support, recommend advice, and to share personal experience. While this could present complications in receiving non-expert advice, Zeiger believes, with some online moderation from professionals, patients will overall see an improvement in their experience with their chronic health issues. To discuss the solitary climate of the world of health and how to change it, we sat down with Dr. Ronnie Zeiger for a conversation that matters.
Ronnie Zeiger, welcome to Conversations That Matter.
Thank you for having me.
What is changing in the way that our relationship is developing with the healthcare system? In the past, we've gone to like one expert and gotten some kind of diagnosis, but how is our relationship changing and why does it need to change?
Well, so the good news is it's changing. The bad news is it needs to change. And one thing is that we aren't very good at measuring the quality of the healthcare we deliver. So the science of healthcare quality measurement is in its infancy, but it's growing, and we're starting to realize that we aren't that good at delivering good quality care. So a landmark study several years back in the New England Journal of Medicine showed that in several important areas, the things that we have proved work really well, we generally deliver about 55% of them.
Why only 55%?
Because it's hard. It's hard to...
Even though we know that it works really well.
Even though we know it works, you know, not everyone shows up. We're not always that good at explaining things. We're sometimes not the best at following the guidelines because we think we might have a slightly better way of doing it. But delivering good care is much more than just knowing the right answer. It's a whole operational process, and it's very difficult. So we're getting to the point where we're kind of coming to terms with the fact that we're only okay at our jobs as a clinical delivery system. And at the same time, we have the world changing around us, and that's the world where all of our patients and their families live, and they are both having higher expectations, and the most interesting thing to me personally is that they are more connected with each other and expect to be more connected with us. So we're no longer able to have siloed individual relationships with people because even though we treat them as silos and our relationships are designed that way, they are not siloed from each other. And that raises a bunch of interesting challenges and I think tremendous opportunities.
So with the way that the world is changing, is more responsibility being put back onto the patient and then having a more expansive relationship with their healthcare provider? And maybe it's more than just one healthcare provider.
So I don't think we necessarily are putting more responsibility on patients. I think many patients are taking more responsibility because they realize that they might need to and that they can.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a
mistake to prescriptively say that patients and families must do more because not all of them can or want to. Mm-hmm. And frankly, as a patient, I don't want to deal with my health. That's the last thing I want to think about. I just want to live my life. Mm-hmm. And so I think the way that I would frame that topic in a more productive way is that we need to be functioning more as a team. Mm-hmm. And that team includes multiple different kinds of clinicians and patients and their families.
When I first corresponded with you, you talked about, you know, what's our relationship with health? How important is it at different stages in our life? And so when we start to take a look at the way we take our health for granted when we're young, so many of us do, and then it becomes vitally important later on. What do we need to do, and what is it that you're now starting to bring to this equation that allows me to have a more intimate relationship with my own well-being?
You know, that's arguably a spiritual question, as well as a practical one, which means I find it both important and really difficult to answer. Mm-hmm. Staying with the relatively mundane way in which we interact with the healthcare system, what I think we want to do is give people permission and opportunity to drop in when they need to, make them feel invited, mm-hmm. make them feel like someone is really there for them to have the conversations that they want to have. For example, when I'm picking up a prescription at a pharmacy, most of the time today, that's a brief transaction with very limited eye contact. Mm-hmm. And especially for younger people who don't have to interact, younger and or relatively healthy people who don't have to interact much with the healthcare system, mm-hmm. that's a missed opportunity. And so that means many things, including that we need to design into the way people commonly interact with the healthcare system good user experiences so that they feel welcome to come back when they need it more, and even open to suggestions about things like preventive measures that they should be taking that they might not otherwise be proactive about.
So you've identified, though, that getting into that space where I can have those conversations, where I can have the time to explore it, hasn't been easy, and you don't necessarily have the network. So enter Ronnie Zeiger. What is it that you're bringing to this equation that will allow me, as someone with a health challenge, to say, okay, now I have an access to a broader community, and a broader community more than just what I'll get from a Google search?
Well, so the work that I'm doing at Smart Patients is just one little piece of the potential broader answer. But the idea that it represents is that we are such fundamentally social people. Mm-hmm. And that's perhaps more important in contexts where we are scared and in unknown territory, and perhaps even afraid for someone that we care about, like a child or a spouse or a parent. Mm-hmm. And today's healthcare system model, both operationally but also culturally, is one where we are funneled, hopefully, to the right place at the right time and have an interaction with an expert who bestows upon us their expertise, which then hopefully we can act upon. Mm-hmm. That's a very lonely experience.
Yes.
And I don't think it fits many of our emotional needs. As a result, I think one of the consequences is that not only do we feel alone, which is a terrible feeling, but we also often end up not doing what those experts suggested because we're not sure if it feels right. You know, especially with, we had an earlier discussion about antidepressants. Taking an antidepressant is a really scary thing. Not only is it the idea of putting something in my body and I don't totally understand it, it's not food, it's a chemical, is that okay?
And but I hear horror stories.
I've heard horror stories, and this one's gonna change my mood? Is it gonna change who I am? Like, these are very big, scary things, potentially, certainly for some people. And so one of the secrets, which needn't be a secret, is that we can be reassured by being connected with others who've been there. Mm-hmm. I've been asking for the last couple of years when I get to speak in front of audiences of clinicians, I've been asked polling clinicians, how many of you have ever introduced one of your patients to another one of your patients?
And the answer is?
Significantly less than 1%.
Why? Why is there a reluctance to do that?
So part of it isn't even, we're not even at the point of reluctance because it doesn't occur to us. It's not part of how we think. It's certainly not part of how we were trained. Again, we have a very expert-centric model. Mm-hmm. So our job is to deliver the right answer, not to introduce someone to someone else who's been there. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait a second. That actually sounds kind of reasonable. Oh, but I think there's some privacy. No, never mind. Now, it turns out from a privacy law perspective, every country where I've looked at the privacy laws, The law is essentially the same thing your mother might have taught you, which is before you introduce two people, ask both of them if it's okay.
We have the same issue when we want to go do a story with somebody who is being treated for medicine. We simply ask them, yep, that's fine, sign a little paper and away you go.
So really there are some logistical details, but they're trivial. Mm-hmm. Really what we're talking about here is a cultural question, that mm-hmm. we don't think that way in medicine. We don't think about connecting people to each other. Huh. And we also don't yet know the right ways to do it. So I now am actively working very hard on building systems that allow us to do that well.
Right.
But it's a surprisingly new idea. Well, actually, the idea is older than the organized practice of medicine. You think about a couple thousand years ago when someone got pregnant for the first time. It was the other women in the village who had been there before that coached her through it and supported her in both practical and emotional ways. So this is very normal behavior,
right.
But we've denormalized it with the way that we've created our healthcare system.
You were talking about how we are inherently social. You go to any social gathering, especially if anybody's over 45 or 50 years of age, they talk about some sort of health issue, and the person's going, oh, I had that, and this is what we did, and cleared up in no time. Oh, and you can see that it gives people relief.
Yeah.
So you're taking that to an online community.
And it's scary, especially from a healthcare system perspective, for a couple of reasons. One, very rationally and appropriately, we clinicians worry that the conversations might not be appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
There might be bad advice being dispensed and bad things happening as a result. So that's one issue. The other issue is that we're used to being in charge. We're used to being in control.
Right.
I'm a control freak, and that's not completely unrelated to my being a clinician.
Yeah.
And so we have a lot of design to do. We have a lot of innovation required to both build infrastructure that allows for high quality communities, and that quality includes making sure that people are safe. Absolutely doable, takes some work, but absolutely doable. And we have some work to do to make this notion of the broader community as potentially, if she wants, part of a patient's team. That's a mm-hmm. relatively new idea, or at least new again.
Right.
But it's not hard, and we're beginning to measure the benefits.
So how does it work? Let's say I go, you know, Dr. Zeiger, I like this idea.
Yeah.
How do I get involved? How do I get
So the ideal way, and with a lot of medical centers that we directly work with, is we set them up with materials. It might be a brochure, it might be a link in your online patient portal
mm-hmm.
that says, hey, you're not the first one to go through this. If you'd like to talk to others who've been there, whether it's about a knee replacement or starting medicines for diabetes or you're worried about being depressed, you're not alone.
And anastomosis.
And so here's how you can join. And you get welcomed. Many people just want to listen. That's totally allowed. And some people want to pose a question or contribute to a discussion. Most of the work that my team does is behind the scenes. We do a lot of social engineering to ensure that the occasional bad actor is handled appropriately. And that people get a thoughtful response in a reasonable amount of time so that you don't feel as alone.
Mm-hmm.
And you are helped with practical things like knowing what questions you should ask at your next visit,
mm-hmm.
and knowing the kinds of things to expect. And oftentimes the people who we can most benefit are actually not perhaps you, the patient, but your loved one who is worrying a lot about you and helping take care of you, who is often the forgotten workhorse of the healthcare system, the family caregiver,
mm-hmm.
Who also needs a lot of support.
So am I going to get advice, or am I going to get insights from other people's experience?
So it's a loaded question.
Yeah.
The terminology can be very loaded. So what you will get is access to a bunch of people who are dealing with or have dealt with similar issues,
mm-hmm.
and honest discussions. You may see a reminder about the fact that this isn't medical advice, that this is anecdotal experience from others. You will often, when one person offers something that could be interpreted as an advice, you'll typically see someone else say, but make sure to talk to your doctor.
Right.
So the network effect is very much in play here. And one of the ingredients of the secret sauce is that we build the communities very intentionally from the beginning in a way that is both the culture of the communities is both respectful and pro-science. You know, maybe a thousand different people in a community, but different subsets of the community step forward depending on what the conversation is about. You know, there are different kind of characters. There's the librarian who remembers everything that was said before. You know, we talked about this before, and here's the review article that someone pointed to. There's kind of the mom that makes sure, you know, and do you have someone to talk to? Because this can be really scary. And again, I think about those as people that can become part of your team if you want. And then one of the most interesting questions we have is, how do we connect that to the official healthcare team? And my obsession now and most of my work is about how do we make that connection so that we can actually prescribe peer support and feed back to the healthcare system, of course, with the patient being in the center of that from a permission perspective, feed back to the healthcare system the kinds of conversations that are going on here so we can learn from them and design a better healthcare system as a result.
Okay, I've been in this online community. I'm having this discussion. I'm concerned about something. People have brought it up. I'm going back to my physician and saying, you know, I was reading this online. What do you think? What's the receptiveness of the clinician or the healthcare provider going to be to, like, oh my gosh, now I'm having to respond to somebody who I have no idea who they are online. Right. Like, is there going to be some resistance there, or are you finding that they're saying, huh, okay, that is an interesting point?
So of course the answer is it depends on a lot of things. How interesting is the point? How was it brought up? How receptive is the person to whom it's being brought up? I think back to, you know, circa the year 2000, which seems like ancient history now in so many ways.
Was there an internet then?
There was, but barely.
Yeah.
And so I was early in my, I was in residency then in my clinical training, and most clinicians, when the topic of the internet came up at that time, would say, you know, it's better if you just stay off the internet.
Yeah.
Now, you know, not much more than 15 years later, if a physician says that or any clinician says that today, they sound like a dinosaur. Like, you can't really get away with saying that. And so we've evolved from a place where we said, you know, just stay away from that in terms of the just content online, to a place where we have more thoughtful conversations about being discerning and maybe suggesting, you know, here are a half dozen sites that in general I find reliable. Not that they're perfect, nor that everything else is bad, but here's a good place to start. And I think we're just now starting that same transition with regards to people finding other people. So it's not perfect. Here's how it can be done. Oh, that is interesting. And in designing how we're operating Smart Patients, you know, I run the shop, and so I get to make some of the harder decisions. And for me, because my personal goals here are to make peer support part of the healthcare delivery toolkit, we're working very hard to address your very question by actually partnering with the healthcare systems to help them invite their patients so that it's actually coming from within.
So one area that I think that I can see tremendous benefit is if I'm on a variety of different medications and I'm reading in the online community and people are saying, well, you better be careful of that combination. If I take that information, I go back to my pharmacist, does that enrich my relationship with that pharmacist if they're going to take a patient care role in my well-being?
Well, hopefully, and I think it's interesting. I think pharmacy is probably an area of relatively low-hanging fruit, both because pharmacists are generally quite good and open to answering questions on a walk-in basis, so it's convenient. And I think that In some cases, the kind of conversation that you mentioned is a great excuse or trigger for that conversation. It may be that the result of that conversation is something totally different. Mm-hmm. So perhaps that combination is totally appropriate for that patient, but there's another question that they could have that they get useful education about.
But you're inviting dialogue.
You're being open to that conversation mm-hmm. as a member of the healthcare system. But there's another really, to me, attractive opportunity, which is a different part of the equation. You get your medication at the pharmacy, and here's a hypothesis, not proved, although I hope to prove it before mm-hmm. too long, that if you are explicitly invited to become, to connect with other people in a similar situation, experience with a similar drug, I hypothesize that you are more likely to actually take the medicine.
Which is a big problem.
Which is a big issue.
Yeah.
Because, and I think the source, or at least one of the sources of that issue, is that we aren't communicating well enough with our patients.
Mm-hmm.
We are assuming that we are delivering to them the information they need and that they will take the medicine, or even if we know they often won't, we're not sure there's anything we can really do about it and we're busy. So I think we can design that into the system.
Mm-hmm.
And I think properly designed peer support can move the needle there. Our culture evolved in a way that we derived a lot of value and ascribed a lot of importance to sitting together at the dinner table and beyond. And so many of the advances that we've had since then have taken us away from that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And in some way, all we're talking about here is becoming more connected in the way we learn from each other and teach each other.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like your idea of micro experts, and that's what we've become. And I applaud you for putting together this network because I think that it will provide valuable information for, well, hopefully hundreds of millions of people. Ronnie Zeiger, thank you very much for doing this.
Thank you for having me, Stu.